The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. No guests today. I'm going solo on the subject of wearables and trackers. Imagine a world, if you would, where we can monitor virtually every activity that we engage in. We can monitor our blood pressure. We can monitor our blood sugar. We can even get lab tests transmitted electronically to some repository that we can access via our mobile devices. We can get data on our sleep. We can get data on the caloric content and nutritional value of every morsel of food that we eat. We will know precisely how much exercise we have expended during a week or a month. We can graph it. Were there even trackers that can tell you you know, how much sex you've had, so that you can actually share on social media how many times you've been engaged in sex, and maybe get some sort of caloric readout. Yeah, I'm being facetious here, but actually there are such apps, because wearables now have accelerometers. Accelerometers measure movement. And that's the way they tell you how many steps you've had. And you better believe that if you're wearing your wearable during sex, there's got to be a way to determine, if you're having sort of like, on a 1 to 10 scale, whether you're having very aerobic sex, whether you're just having sort of lazy, snuggling. That may be a facetious application of this technology. But for some people, clearly this is like too much. It's too much information. Leave me alone. I'll do my thing. I just don't want to be assaulted with all this kind of information. Other people, they want a report card. I don't quite get that psychology. People who want every single moment's activity tracked, monitored, recorded, maybe even shared on social media. It's people who are sort of competitive about that. But hey, there's a market for that. And there's got to be some potential application in medicine for this, because more and more practices are starting to develop portals where patients can share health information. They can share blood pressure information. There are now some very nice devices that are Bluetooth connected to your mobile device. One of them is it's called the Cardio with a Q. There are actually several, but that's the one that has a very nice design, which is a compact unit that measures your blood pressure. And, we talked about wrist pulse measurement. Forget about wrist blood pressure measurement. That's not a way to go. Or fingertip blood pressure measurement. That is highly inaccurate, and devices like that shouldn't even be allowed. But these devices that wrap around your arm, the way you get blood pressure checked in the doctor's office, that are automated, give a pretty good and accurate reading of your blood pressure. And then maybe, after a doctor's visit where your doctor's exhorted you to get on a better diet or take certain supplements that lower your blood pressure, or perhaps they initiate a new blood pressure medication, then the doctor can see at a, with just a swipe of a fingertip, whether you're achieving your blood pressure goal, or perhaps diabetics. Diabetics can now enter in their information. That information can be sent electronically to the doctor. Patients can also analyze trends. This is useful because, who's a better custodian of your health than yourself? You may want to study how different exercise regimens, different supplements, different diet modifications, or even different medications impact your finger stick blood sugars. And it may be easier and easier in non-invasive ways to determine blood sugar in the future, without those troublesome finger pricks. So the technology is very exciting. But, the question is, Is it too much? Does it create too much self-awareness? One area that I find absolutely unappealing is sleep tracking. Sleep tracking. We all know the importance of sleep. And many devices actually purport to give you a readout on your sleep. Now, this is my take on it. I think that making people more self-conscious about whether or not they're getting a good night's sleep could be counterproductive. Because one of the rules of sleep hygiene is to tell people to disconnect, is to get rid of electronic devices, get rid of your, you know, stop reading your email, stop watching, you know, exciting, violent TV shows. Okay, you know, maybe read a book with a dim light. Light itself is something that interferes with sleep. But, you know, to me, one thing I absolutely do every night when I go to sleep, with the occasional exception, say I'm, you know, I have to wake up for a race, even if I do, you know, like a, you know, like an early morning triathlon, you have to get up sometimes at like 3:30 in the morning or something to get to the triathlon. You know, even then I'll take off my watch. I'll put my watch on alarm. And I just don't like the idea of having a watch on me, because it's part of going to sleep is you unplug. But sleep trackers you wear, and based on your movements, they tell you whether you are having how much you're sleeping. And I got to say, this is a little bit of an extrapolation, because how do they know whether you're having normal sleep movements or whether you're tossing and turning? It's unless it's directly connected to your sleep center in your brain, it's at best an approximation of how much you sleep. Some people tell me, oh, don't worry. No, the results are pretty accurate. They pretty much mirror my experience of sleep. And they're okay with it. They're used to the idea. And, you know, at the end of the week, they could say, oh, you know, look, I've logged the requisite amount of sleep. I'm no longer in sleep deficit. And that's a worthwhile goal, because sleep is an important element of health. On the other hand, you know, all this, these notions about what's optimal are based on averages and based on studies that sometimes are wrongheaded. A recent contrarian study about the amount of sleep that everybody needs looked at Paleolithic cultures. There's a few isolated tribes which haven't yet had contact with modern civilization. And the anthropologists went into the wild and recorded how much sleep these individuals had. And they found that on average, they had about 6.5 hours of sleep, less in the summer, 5.5 hours. And so the notion that we in modern civilization have left behind our pristine roots and we're all in major sleep deficit because we only sleep 6.5 or 7 hours a night isn't necessarily right. But, you know, different strokes for different folks. Some people require more sleep than others. Depending on their health status, their genetics, or simply their preference, what works for them. So, you know, to make people more self-conscious about the process of sleep might create a sort of a sleep neurosis, in my opinion. Another example of where this technology can go awry is that Apple Watches have an annoying feature which sends you an alert when you're sitting for too long. Like, for example, as I do this podcast, I'm sitting. And I don't happen to have my Apple Watch on, but I could get, as I'm sitting, I could get a little bing, and it's a very slight haptic sensation, like a tiny vibration that alerts you. And your wrist is very sensitive, so you feel this little vibration. It goes, and then you pay attention, it says, alert, it's time to stand. Your watch is telling you to stand up, which may be good, because frankly, I spend too much time sitting. And it's good to get up and shake yourself out, and you know, and that's thought to be good. This is also based on what may or may not be a true hypothesis, which is that sitting is the new smoking. In other words, even if you do exercise, the amount of sitting you do is a net negative for your health. And so this has become like the new meme, is sitting is the new smoking. And so we sit too much, and people are now getting standing desks, and they're jumping up and down to make sure that they don't sit too long continuously. And again, you know, as with the sleep study, there's a new study that's been a fly in the ointment for this sitting hypothesis, which states that contrary to previous assertions, sitting too much has no negative impact on your health. That is, if you are on a relatively healthy diet and if you get an adequate amount of exercise. I mean, it's, if sitting precludes exercise, I get it. But I do both. I exercise a ton. I swam 100 laps in a pool this morning. But then the rest of my day has been spent doing podcasts and paperwork and answering emails. And then there's going to be a World Series game on tonight, and I'm going to do some more sitting. So am I completely erasing the benefits? My iWatch will keep telling me, get up, you know, you're sitting too much. But this is, you know, for, it's interesting that for an incredibly sophisticated company like Apple that has an amazing mastery of technology, just they do wondrous things with technology, that their health apps are based on what might not be, you know, precise rocket science, assertions or hypotheses that may ultimately be disproven. And they're banking on these hypotheses being correct. Like, this is the requisite number of calories you need to expend. This is the requisite number of sleep you need to have. This is the requisite number of times you have to have sex every week to make sure that you are healthy. You know, things, normative values that may or may not be applicable to every single human Apple Watch wearer. So, okay, enough with the caveats. Let's talk about, you know, some of the devices that are available and what some of your options are. And the point I made at the conclusion of the last podcast is you can't have it all. There's a give and take with devices. Some have some features and some and which others don't. And the ones that have the most features tend to be big and cumbersome. And if you like that really hunky-looking kind of, you know, diver's watch look, and that you're okay with that, and you have a big wrist, then that's fine. But you're also going to pay a premium. Some of these, the fanciest devices cost, you know, $500-$600. So, you know, so one of the things that you can simply do is you can get an Apple Watch and pair it with your iPhone, or conversely, you can get the Android version of the Apple Watch. I don't know, there's several offerings there, and pair it with your Android phone. And the disadvantage of that, as I said, is the Apple Watch does intermittent pulse rate. It will check your pulse, and then you have to schlep your phone with you for the most part to get GPS. Okay, so say you don't want, you say you want to track your run or your bike ride, but you don't want to schlep your phone, especially while running. I get it, while bicycle riding, it's easy, you can put it in your back pocket, but by running, maybe you don't want to bounce around with a phone. So you can get various brands of watches that are equipped with GPS. A popular one is the Garmin 920 XT, which a lot of triathletes use. It's a fancy watch. It costs $450. It gives you all kinds of things. It gives you altitude, cadence. It works in the water, unlike the Apple Watch. I know a couple people who have that or comparable models. And but there's a problem with that one, too, is that if you want heart rate, it doesn't read your heart rate from your wrist. It reads your heart rate from a strap. So there is a bit of a disadvantage to that one. It seems that the difficulty is that the technology that's necessary for getting a pulse rate off your wrist is a big, hunky, energy-hogging technology. And so to get GPS and cadence and altitude and all these things into a device, you'd have to have a device that's the size of an alarm clock on your wrist, and you know, a bedside alarm clock, and that just is impractical. But in future, we may see all these features incorporated into a single device, and then maybe the price point will come down. But it's kind of cool when you take one of these things out for a bike ride, for example. You can You've got a GPS, so you can actually, well, I'm lost. So, okay, great. Well, look at your watch. Look at where you are. It's actually, hey, Garmin is losing out in the automotive marketplace because a lot of cars are already equipped with in-dash GPS. So Garmin and Polar, companies like that, who used to make these GPS guidance systems for cars, are now shrinking the devices and making them available for athletes, cyclists, runners, so that you can see where you're going. The other thing you can do is you can share your experience. You can make it a social experience. And in real time, you can actually even communicate with fellow athletes, like, how you doing? How's your workout going? Well, I'm here, you're there, let's meet up, blah, blah, blah. On a simpler level, if you want to just get into, a little bit of tracking, things like there's the entry models of the Jawbone, the Fitbit, these are little incentivizing devices that just give you, your steps. They measure your steps, and they're small, and they're light, and they, just automatic. You don't have to interact with them very much. They'll just give you, how many steps did you do? That's no big deal. And if you want, you can record that to your computer, and you can graph it. There's sometimes Bluetooth capabilities. If you just want your pulse while you're swimming, biking, or running, I recommend the Mio, which I have, or the Basis. They're pretty similar. They both use similar technology to measure your pulse from your wrist. And it's also, which do you like better? Also, there's a TomTom Runner, which uses the wrist technology and is waterproof. That's another option. With the Basis and the Mio, and I think the TomTom Runner, the entry level, more fancy ones might have GPS, but you can get by with a Mio or a Basis for about $150. But you don't get the GPS, you don't get the altitude, you don't get pinged with texts like an iWatch and so on. But the advantage of these hunkier watches is that you don't have to carry your Android or your Apple Watch, and they're many of them are fully submersible. Again, sometimes you have to use a chest strap, which is the drawback. I mean, there's not, again, you can please some of the people some of the time. You can't please all of the people all the time. Well, however that expression, all the people some of the time, some of the people all of the time. But you can't always get what you want. To mix quotations from Abraham Lincoln and the Rolling Stones. So there you go. I don't purport to have given you the most in-depth consumer reports, field testing of every single device out there, but hopefully this provides you with a bit of a guide and a philosophical basis for deciding, do you want to get in the game? Do you want to go fancy? Do you want to go entry level? Or, hey, if you don't want to even do it at all, don't feel bad, because if you're self-motivated and you don't need a lot of quantitative feedback, more power to you, because it's different strokes for different folks when it comes to trackers and wearables. And, this field is exploding. So in probably in a few months, I'll offer you another update with new findings, new products, and new ideas on wearables and trackers. Thanks very much for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.